Well?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is...
Luke.
And...
Ralph.
That's right. My usual co-hosts are with me. Who would have known that? And this is episode number 114. There's nothing magical about that number, just 114. And today's episode is going to consist of three movies that Luke chose for us this week. It was his week to choose. And the movies he chose... straight from Netflix, the Aaron Sorkin written and directed movie, The Trial of the Chicago 7. And is it The Trial or just Trial?
The Trial.
I should double check that. Thank you. And it worked right. Good. And then we're going to do an Amazon. Is it Amazon? Amazon Prime original movie, or one of their movies that they've collaborated with or bought to stream on their site, called Black Box. Check that out. It's like a sci-fi horror, kind of. And then we're going to conclude with our review of The Departed, which ends our marathon, which is, you know, why are they doing a 10-year-old movie? The Departed is part of our Jack Nicholson retrospective marathon. We're looking at his works in all shapes and sizes, kind of going through the decades, so to speak, through the years from his beginnings. And now we've ended at The Departed. And that's what we'll be doing today. You can always find this episode and all of our other episodes over at our website, which is otherpodcast.com. And over there, you find all of the 100-plus shows, our previous bonus episodes that we used to do. We did a bonus run for about a year and change, 2 years, actually, that you can find on there, not to mention other marathons we've done in the past and top 10 shows, which are aplenty. Check that out at otherpodcast.com. Not to mention, you can always, you know, wherever you find us or listen to us, if it's not on your laptop or whatever, on the website, you can always find us. I never mentioned this part, but we are hosting through Podbean. You can look at us up there originally. That's the hosting site. And not to mention iTunes, Spotify, whatever. And yeah, check us out there. Now, before we get into recent discoveries, Ralph, I'm going to start with you this time. How's your life been? How you been, man, over the last 2 weeks?
I've been pretty good. I just been catching up on some TV and watching some football, fantasy football, full effect.
Are you still winning?
Yeah, actually. Most of my leagues I'm winning. I think I'm one league I'm at a losing streak, losing record.
Huh.
But everything else is winning records.
Is there money at the end of this rainbow?
Some of them there is, some of them there's not, yes.
Hmm.
So two I do for fun, two I do for cash.
Cold hard cash.
Besides that, just had my what seems to be annual trip with a bunch of friends from work. So,
oh, you guys have an annual outing, huh?
Yeah, we do.
Cool. You see that in some movies, right? Uh-huh. Like some movies, they do that. Where'd you go?
Starved Rock.
That's in Illinois, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go there. I hear it's beautiful.
It is fun. Yes, we walked further than we normally do, mm-hmm. So that was cool.
Right on.
Yep. But besides that, I have been watching a ton of TV. Finished The Boys. Great show. Great season. I'm doing Bly Manor or whatever it's called.
Bly. Yeah.
Yeah, Bly Manor for The Haunting of Hill House or whatever. The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad either. I'm not hating it. And then besides that, I've been watching, obviously, football. And I've been trying to actually make a trip to go to, like, the movies again. So we'll see if I can.
Is there anything even worth seeing in the theaters now?
Well, actually, there's, like, a bunch of $5 movies that are, like, I've already seen before.
Oh.
So, like, I wouldn't mind going to one of those.
Not, like, Unhinged?
I actually kind of want to watch Liam Neeson's movie.
I heard about it. I don't remember though, off the top of my head.
Right, I couldn't tell you the name of it to save my.
I mean, mind. I think it's safe to say that when Tenet comes out on VOD, which will probably be December, we're going to review it probably then. I would like to do a full review if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah.
I assume I have no pushback on that one, but I would like to make it back to the movie theater, even for a classic like Poltergeist or something. I don't care.
Right. You know? It's Honest Thief. That's what it's called.
Honesty. Yeah.
Honest Thief.
Honest Thief. Okay.
Right.
I knew exactly. Something with honest. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I'm debating. But other than that, really nothing.
You don't want to go see The War with Grandpa?
I don't even know what that's about.
What the fuck is that?
It's a, right. Some De Niro movie.
All right. No.
I guess he's grandpa on that one, huh?
I guess so. But besides that, like I said, I've just been watching some TV. I'm trying to catch up on like some TV shows. I started some other random shows, but I only give them like 3 episodes. So after the 3 episodes, if I don't like them, meh.
Meh. Right.
Yep.
I mean, that's how TV is really good. So it's a high bar now.
It is high bar. You know what? That's what I tell people. I go, if I don't have the time, I don't have the time. It is what it is. I'll watch something, and sometimes, like, so movies are the only thing that I finish. Because once, unless if I don't like it, like, in the 15 minutes, then I'm like, I'm out. But even then, I'll actually watch a movie and finish it.
Because movies are shorter.
Mm-hmm. Right, but a TV show, I'll give it three to five episodes, depending on how long the episodes are, and then I'm gone.
Yeah.
If I don't like them. And if I like them, I'll continue. So.
Right on. Luke, how about you?
I took a little vacation last week to the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Spent some time in Connecticut, which, oh my God, they have actual fall there.
Oh, you mean with the leaves and shit?
They are like vibrant ass colors. Not like the dull ones we have here. I was like surprised. Yeah.
Well, no, we kill the spirit of everything, not just human beings in Chicago.
The Midwest for you. Then I spent 2 days in Boston, did my walk to the Freedom Trail, which is something I've always wanted to do since playing Fallout 4.
Is that in Boston?
Yes.
Freedom Trail in Boston? Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't know anything of this thing you're talking about.
It's a bunch of destinations that like coincide with like the American
Since
Revolution.
We're doing The Departed, did you do a walkthrough of all the Departed sightings?
No, but I did go to like the Little Italy place. That's where me and my friend had dinner most of the nights. There was some amazing food over there. Some really great pastry shops, all kinds of things.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Are you bearing the lead here? Are you going to mention a thing?
What thing?
The statue.
Oh yes. Well, after the 2 days in Boston, we took a trip to Salem, Massachusetts, and we visited the Satanic Temple / Salem Art Gallery, where if you see the documentary "Hail Satan" that we reviewed once, is prominently displayed there in one of their rooms.
Yeah, and you sent me a snap of you next to it.
Oh, I was fucking so giddy.
Yeah, you look giddy.
I was so happy.
You're not very photogenic, but you were giddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good. Are you a member now?
I've been a member for a little now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great.
Do you get extra perks when you went in?
No.
Like they give you like a wine glass full of blood or something?
Acknowledgement that he's a member.
They just acknowledge it. They welcome member. Right. And that's the extent of that.
But surprisingly, they did have a lot of cool art pieces in there. They actually have two Salvador Dali sketches. Like, holy fuck. I wonder how much they'll set them back.
I wonder. But, you know, sometimes those things are donated, too.
It said underneath that they were actually, I think, acquired. Because there was, like, little plaques underneath.
They usually do have plaques. And, so I guess maybe they bought it.
They had, like, a little exhibit from this one.
Why Dali?
I don't know, but it was really.
I mean, they were wrong. The guy is not pro-religion, but like, as far as I know about him.
But they had a whole room like the whole like Satanic Panic thing with like.
Well, yeah, you have
it was
to.
Great.
That's half the reason it exists, basically. is to show that it's nothing to be panicky about. A great movie. Anyone wants to is curious about that? Check out the documentary "Hail Satan." That's awesome, Luke. I'm so jealous about Salem aspect of your trip. Yes, the rest of it, I don't give a shit about. But
Salem was great. The witch museums, they had all kinds of tours.
Of course.
And because it's October, that thing's like in full blast. So like everything was getting sold out.
Oh, wow. So COVID's not stopping that, huh?
No. Apparently, there's a park in Salem that like they have all activities. That was very barren, according to my friend who's been there in the time.
Okay. That's cool. You didn't visit the Lizzie Borden house, right? I mentioned that to you. I think you would have told me if you did.
Yeah,
right?
No, I didn't. There was so much stuff to do.
No, I hear you. But I want to go there for sure one day. So that's what Luke's been doing. It sounds pretty exciting. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I think you got us all beat this week, honestly, on that one.
I also did take a day trip to Martha's Vineyard.
You know? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Fancy.
Now you're. Sounds fancy. I don't think I can even allow it.
I had friends that I used to work with there, so it was great seeing them again. And they had no idea I was going to show up, so it was a good surprise for them.
So they were talking shit about you right before you walked in?
No.
That makes sense.
It was actually, we caught one guy off guard because he didn't know I was there. So I hid in like a shed and he was like, oh, how's Luke guy, you know, Luke doing and everything. And my friend's like, why don't you ask him? He's like, oh, he's not here. And then I popped out. He's like, holy fuck, you're here. Yeah.
No, it's a hologram.
Yeah, because we all worked together, and he's like, I still tell everybody, no one can compare to you guys. You are the best fucking team we ever had.
Is that true?
It is.
To this day?
It is. Hmm. Yeah, they complain about
it. I hope your current team is listening in, is my point.
They will never.
I hope they're listening. So take note, guys. Do work better.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't have anything super like awesome, but I have something awful. But it's also kind of great to talk about. So this started 3 weeks ago, so before the last show even. I had car problems that Ralph helped me out involving getting a new battery, which died in my parking lot of my job. And at night, late at night, I had to get my parents to help me jump it. And even then, it was still very much like dying and teetering. It was really dead. And so after the whole night and getting it all dead, and Ralph, thank you again for helping me. 2 days after, a coworker of mine, the closer that closes the store with me, her car battery, completely dead too, in exactly the same fashion, almost exactly the same fashion. And she had another problem involving some sort of fuel injector or something, I don't know. But it was some other problem that she had to get fixed very suddenly by the next morning. Cut to a week later, roughly. And we had a barista get into a car accident and broke his arm. And he's out of commission now. He's still obviously out of commission. It's going to be at least weeks. We assume maybe months more. I don't know how long, you know, bones heal in that sense, or when he can come back to work. But that happened suddenly one morning, right? And then a few days after that, maybe half a week, one of our other supervisors got into a car accident and cracked his sternum.
What's a sternum? It.
It's like it's like your chest. As cracked as might be too strong, maybe it sounds stronger, but he did injure it, you know, and to the point where it was needed medical attention and all that. He's actually more fine than the broken arm guy, which I didn't think would be possible because it sounds way worse on him, but he actually made it back to work a week after that. So anyway, and we had another incident, not car related, but another incident where another supervisor had to get medical attention and his shifts needed to be covered for at least 2 weeks. It's almost approaching the second week, I think. So he's gone too, and I had to take some of his shifts too. So I think my store is cursed, and I think we made a witch a really bad latte, and I think she's taking it out on us. So I wanted to mention the curse here in case I suddenly die from some wacky incident, because it started with my car problems and then more car problems happened after that. And it was worse and worse and worse. So I thought that was kind of funny, interesting to mention. It's awful, but it happened. It's been happening. For all I know, I'm going to go there tomorrow and I don't know what's going to happen. So a car's going to drive through the fucking store for all I know. So I wanted to talk about that real quick and just say that a little bit. And to also mention that this weekend I'm getting my second Shure glider, and I will have more for that on the next episode. So that's what we've been up to lately. Now we get into recent discoveries. And of course, did you guys, Luke, do you have anything for recent discoveries?
Yes.
Yes,
I did manage to watch one movie despite, I was like, oh man, I'm going to be on a plane for 2 hours. I'll watch a movie in, it was one of those small jets, so they didn't have like the whole thing on the internet.
Oh, right, right.
Very piss poor. But I did manage to see The Devil All the Time.
Nice.
The Netflix exclusive?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's one of their movies.
Starring Spider-Man before he got his spider powers.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Holland, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And
Thomas and Holland.
Yes. And the other one I really remember is Robert Pattinson, Vampire Boy.
You don't recognize the other actors?
Like, I mean, I know Bill Skarsgård.
Right. And the Killers. They're both pretty big actors.
Yeah. No.
Okay, it's fine. So what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was great. At first, I wasn't sure where it was going with everything.
Right.
And then like, I'm like, who's going to be like the focal point of this movie? And then it turned out to be like Tom Holland and everything. And all that fun stuff that, or crazy stuff that happened to him as a child. And how he is, you know, in his when he's older and shit. So.
Yeah.
Then, fucking priests, man, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a, It's maybe not the best movie a lot of people would want to watch in this period of life, this 2020 year, because it's really down. It's such a dour, fucked up movie. But I love it. Yeah. I couldn't get enough of it. So, but I'm glad you liked it too. What did it? Did it make you feel like shit?
I mean, it seems like there's no one was like a good person in this movie. Everyone was kind of like a shithead. In one way or another, these people are just fuck, man.
Yeah, even the people that met well, they're kind of shitheads in their own way. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I overall agree. It's kind of a hard movie to recommend because the way you're describing it, I mean, it doesn't sound like a movie I want to watch, but I enjoyed it. That's all. I went on it. Well, I saw a movie on the strength of the director alone, so that's cool. Anything else on Devil All the Time?
No, man, just check it out. I dug it. What did this guy do before, though?
He did a movie called Rebecca. Was that right? Is it called Rebecca? I think so. About the newscaster that killed herself in the 70s, 80s, in front of a TV audience. Did that one. Did Christine. A movie called... Christine, sorry. I said Rebecca, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Christine. Rebecca Ferguson, maybe the actress? I don't know.
Actress was Rebecca Hall.
Hall. There you go. See? I'm mixing everything up. But I knew Rebecca was somewhere in there, is my point. So, yeah, he did Christine. He also did After School, which is the first movie I saw of his. Really great. And I just like his style. I like his... I mean, he's a very... it's a fucked up director. He likes fucked up themes and shit, but I like how he explores them. So, I'm a fan. So, that's on Netflix. Check it out, The Devil All the Time. And I think that's it, right, for you, Luke?
That is it.
All right, Rob, why don't you hit us up on your one movie you saw?
Man, putting you on blast.
Well, we all know that of him. And he's... I'm killing time for him right now. Because
you are putting me on blast. No, that's fucked up.
Baja Blast, maybe, but not Baja.
Anyways, my movie that I saw was Hubie Halloween.
Oh, it's yeah. Hubie.
Yeah,
Hugh.
Hubie. I wasn't what sure if it was like Hubby or Hubie. Hubby?
Yeah, no, yeah. It's Hubie. Hubie Dubois. That's his name.
Dubois.
In the movie.
Yikes.
Yikes, indeed. This is the Adam Sandler movie starring...
Let me guess, it's a Netflix original?
Yeah.
Did he save the CEO of Netflix life some time ago and just offered him all these movies?
I think
he made Netflix.
He made Netflix, yeah.
I don't know about that. Oh, anyway, sorry, Ralph. What's this movie about?
I'll read the description. Despite his devotion to his hometown of Salem and its Halloween celebration, Hubie Dubois is a figure of mockery for kids and adults alike. But this year, something is going to bump in the night, and it's up to Hubie to save Halloween. So basically, he's like the town joke. They just make fun of him, but in the end, he's just like a nice guy. He's got this weird thermos that it's like Inspector Gadget thermos, where it has like all the gadgets on there, but it's like impossible because you'd have to swap out. Like, it's just impossible how this thermos works.
That's impossible.
Like, well, he's got like a shovel in the thermos. And you're like,
what?
Okay. And it's a megaphone, and it's a thermos also.
And so it's like the, what's that D&D, the bag that you can hold everything in? Bag of holding? There you go. Took me a while there.
So, you got there. I mean, it's funny. So, that's what it is. And then he's talking like he's almost like Little Nicky, but with kind of like,
that's okay.
More like a little kid because he like never got mentally old or something.
Right.
But let's take a wild guess and let's see what actors are in this movie. What actors do you guys think is in this movie?
The probably the same ones he's always with.
Which ones?
Well, that's not an answer. You have to
the guy with the face.
That's helpful. So give me at least one, Luke, and I'll let you go out of this one.
Wait, are you not going to ask me?
I expect like 10 out of you.
Oh, like, I did have one.
There's that right one chick he's always in a movie with.
Okay, so you don't know anything. So
No.
He's stalling while he's on IMDb. So go ahead, Oscar.
Rob Schneider. Rob Schneider's in Always Wanted.
Was a name I was going to mention, the Rob Schneider.
Yeah, Rob Schneider is in this movie, correct.
And I assume that fat guy, that Bob Mart, Klopp, Mart.
Kevin James? Cop,
yeah,
Kevin
that one. James in this movie, Paul Blart, correct? That guy. That's the only two I can think of.
Okay, so I'll maybe tell you another person who's in this movie. Ben Stiller.
Oh, wow.
Cameo, okay.
Okay.
Ray Liotta.
What?
Guys. Yeah. Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
Tim Meadows. Michael Chiklis.
What?
Michael Chiklis? I thought he was, like, retired.
Dude, I'm telling you. Kenan Thompson is in there. Shaquille O'Neal, I guess. Julie Bowen. Shaq is in this movie. And it's random, Kazam. Bro. Random.
Or Kazam.
Kazam?
Yeah, Kazam.
Maya George Rudolph? Collins.
Yeah, Maya Rudolph. I was going to get to Maya Rudolph. So, yeah, it's a crazy cast. Wow, I'm not going to lie to you.
They put money into this one or something.
I mean, it is what it
money
is.
Has never been his problem.
Money's never been the problem.
It's the quality.
It's the Metacritic score. Hey, who wants to take a shot in the dark? What's the meta score? I'm looking at it right now.
I'm looking at it too.
You 12?
That's too low.
Yeah.
No, that's way too low. Higher.
22?
Higher.
53. 32? 53. Anyways, so the movie was like, okay. I saw it with a friend of ours, and he liked it also. It was just okay. We were just like, okay. I mean, that was hard. Whatever.
That happened.
Yeah, so I was like, that happened, exactly. And I was like, alright, whatever. Cool. But besides that, I mean, it's Adam Sandler. Like, I mean, he makes money for Netflix and himself. It is what it is. Like, people watch it, they're going to watch it regardless, and someone's going to enjoy it. He's making movies for people
for Netflix
times of age, and for Netflix, yeah. I mean, it is what it is, I guess. So, other than that, I mean, it had moments of, like, pretty cool stuff going on in it. And then a lot of moments of not pretty cool stuff happening in that. So, yeah, that was that movie.
All right. That's Hubie Halloween. Check it out on Netflix if you wish. I have four things. It's a horror season, guys, so I saw a couple horror movies here. I'll probably watch a lot more so for next time, so I'll have a few more on the next show. Two of them are not so good, and then two of them are pretty good. So the first one here is The Silencing, which you can rent, or I think just rent maybe, but maybe you can buy on VOD. The Silencing, a reformed hunter living in isolation in a wildlife sanctuary becomes involved in a deadly game of cat and mouse when he and the local sheriff set out to track a vicious killer who may have kidnapped his daughter years ago. And no one really like knowable, like I went in this movie cold. Just on the strength of the main actor, which isn't a big strength necessarily. It's Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who plays Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. He's starring in this movie. That's the only reason, and it was like a horror movie, it looked like. That's why I saw it. And it also stars Annabelle Wallace. This movie was just okay and barely okay, honestly. I think that they had their hands on a really awesome like thriller that they could have done like cool set, not cool set pieces for the coolness of it, but they could have had set pieces where it would have made the story much more interesting and definitely wouldn't have seemed quite as slow or boring as it felt, especially for a movie that isn't that long. But for the plot synopsis that I gave you, it definitely should have moved, not faster necessarily, but it should have moved with more energy than I found it did. And overall, even though the story, you know, made sense and fine, it was fine. It had an ending, and it ended, and everything was whatever. The only thing that really got me that I liked in the movie is that it would set up tropey scenes. Like, for example, the bad guy about to kill the main actor. You know, the hatchet's up in the air, or the bullet's cocked, and he's about to shoot, and something stops him. You know that? It happens all the time. This movie subverts that, and he does it, and the movie does it twice. And then the way it pays off, where the main actor, I guess, the main character, still makes it out, is interesting inherently. And if this movie around it was also awesome, I would totally highlight those points more. But alas, it was just like two little shining spots in a pretty kind of a bland movie. So I would not totally recommend this movie. But I saw it, and you can rent it, like I said. The next one, I should say, is I got from Shudder. Shudder.com, horror movie site. It's called The Cleansing Hour. And here's the thing here. Another successful exorcism streamed online, or so it seems. Can The Exorcist, producer, and their team bring their ratings up? Ratings skyrocket when a real demon gets involved. It's not a great description. I don't know why I read that. This is a film directed and written by Damien Levesque. I don't know who that guy is. All actors I don't really know, except for Kyle Gallner, who's someone you guys will recognize probably right away. This is, just a 2020 movie. It's technically 2019, but I think it just got released on Shudder 2020. It's one of their exclusives, I believe. Cleansing Hour is one of those things where, like, it's like the Exorcism of Emily Rose, maybe, or, like, What's that one that's also kind of found footage-y that stars the girl from Dexter? I forget the name of it. Or it's about this guy who fakes exorcisms and then he actually stumbles upon a real one. It's kind of like that, where it's about these guys who Blair stream. Witch? Nope, not Blair Witch. That's not it at all. It's about a guy who streams really well-made, like Hollywood-type made, like sets and squibs and set design. But exorcism online as if he's real. As if he's a real priest and does all do all everything, but alas, he's a fake. And then a real person really does possess the actress in the chair that he's like pretending to exorcise her from. And as you may imagine, it goes batshit crazy from there. And the movie doesn't get—I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. The movie's not great. It's barely—it's—it's—I say it's fine, but it's not good either. It is fun to watch though, especially if you don't really care, and I didn't care about any of the characters, so maybe I had more fun with it than I should have. And so I found the Cleansing Hour kind of fun to watch because it does get bonkers. It doesn't get like over the top bonkers, but it almost does. And it has a solid ending that I enjoyed. I saw it coming, but I enjoyed it regardless. And it does have a couple things in there that happens that I didn't expect. That was kind of nice to watch, but it is kind of like it's kind of really bloody. It's kind of loud. It has a lot of all the demon stuff that you might expect. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, because it's the season, I recommend The Cleansing Hour, but only a little bit, not like a lot. I have another one here that the movie, they're not going to tell me, are they? Yeah, they're not going to tell me. So it's not IMDb because it's a short movie. It's called Cat Calls.
Mm-hmm.
This short movie is about 9 minutes long. It's a short little thing. We'll spend 1 minute talking about it. Also on Shudder. It's really cool. It's about this guy who molests, but not like physically, just molests like with words and motions. These two girls along in his car when they're walking along the street at late at night. And what he doesn't know is that they're actually cat people or cat demons or animorphs or something very strange. So the guy gets home and he starts like seeing these weird things on the side of the corner of his eyes. And then, as you may imagine, the cats come calling, you know, so to speak. And it's a very short, very nicely well-made, sleek, kind of a cool revenge, really quick plot thing that goes on there. So check it out, Cat Calls, really quick thing there. I have this one last one that I recommend for all of you guys to watch it. I think all of you guys will enjoy it. It's called Tread. Anyone heard of it?
Anyone? No.
Tread. It's a Netflix documentary. It's a movie. It's a Netflix documentary.
Oh, okay.
Here's a description. It's also from this year. I totally could have picked it for the next movie. Pushed to his breaking point.
Why don't master, you?
Maybe I will still. A master welder in a small town at the foot of the Rocky Mountains quietly fortifies a bulldozer with 30 tons of concrete and steel and seeks to destroy those he believes had wronged him. This is, like I said, a documentary movie, not a show, because I know they have a lot of shows on there.
Tread?
Tread.
T-R-E-A-D.
No, I know yes. How to spell it. I'm an idiot.
I thought he was asking. I really recommend it. I saw it on a whim, just like I was perusing Netflix. I was folding laundry, one of those kind of things. And I was just totally into this movie. Totally into
it. Oh, my God. I remember this in the news.
Yeah. So, I never heard of it in the news. This happened in 2004 where this fucking guy and the movie. Okay. So, I explained it in this plot synopsis, but this fucking guy takes revenge on this whole town, this small town and wherever he lives. And he does it by like fucking, you know, supermaxing, you know, roiding up some fucking bulldozer he bought to the point where it was impenetrable and he caused a lot of destruction before he was able to be stopped. And it's all about that, you know, leading up to that one crazy day that this happens. And the whole movie uses, so the wonderful thing about this movie is that, you know, when this happened, the perpetrator, had recorded himself, voice recording, his, like, life story. Like almost like a suicide long letter. Think of it that way, maybe, or something like that. You don't know what it is until the end. And even then you have to kind of make up your own mind, but he records all these things explaining his actions, you know? And so the movie obviously uses the fuck out of that to voice over a lot of the things that are happening in the movie. And the rest of the movie is done with, dramatizations, really well-made dramatizations of what happened in this town and the events leading up to the event. And obviously, like I said, documentary, real thing. And it even explains why this story wasn't a biggest story as it should have been at the time in 2004. And it talks about that too a little bit at the end. So check it out. I highly recommend it. Everyone will enjoy it. It's a really a little intense, but you know, it shows a lot about a certain type of Americana too. It does a really well made. I really liked it. Tread on Netflix, and that is what we've. That's our recent discoveries. And we're going to take a little break here. And then upon returning, we're going to talk about our first movie review of the evening, which is what, Luke?
The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Damn right. Stay with us.
We want to underscore again that we're coming to Chicago peacefully, but whether we're given permits or not, we're coming.
We're going to Chicago to protest the Vietnam War.
And there's no place to be right now but in it.
We watched for a decade while these rebels without a job tell us how to prosecute a war. But they're going to spend their 30s in a federal facility, real time.
People say, you know, Abby, are you concerned about an overreaction from the cops?
Holy shit.
You all right?
No words until I saw that.
Are the people ready to make opening arguments?
At the defense table.
Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Dave Dellinger, Rennie Davis, Lee Weiner, John Froines, Tom Hayden, and Bobby Seale.
These defendants had a plan, and the plan was to incite a riot.
I call this portion of the trial with friends like these.
My trial's begun without my lawyer.
The court assumes you are being represented by the Black Panther sitting behind you.
The riots were started by the Chicago Police Department.
Sustained.
Nobody objected.
The story of seven people on trial stemming from various charges surrounding the uprising at the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
That's a silent.
I know. I'd say
okay. Okay. Thank God, because I was like, you live here? All right.
Directed and written by the one, the only, Aaron Sorkin. He is the man you need to go for you know, these types of movies. Paper thrillers, I guess, as Oscar would call them.
Yeah. All right. He's really good at that.
Mm-hmm. Has a fucking amazing cast of people. I was super surprised about that one. So I'll give you my first impressions, since I'm already talking.
Okay.
I mean, you got Eddie Redmayne, Sacha Baron Cohen, fucking John Carroll Lynch, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, fucking Michael fucking Keaton, other people that are probably big and I don't know. But yeah.
Jesus.
Frank Langella? Nothing?
Mark Rylance?
Yeah.
Sure.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Mark Rylance. From the Bridge of Spies and shit.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Oh, him.
Yeah. Okay. A fucking Russian guy.
Oh, from Dunk. Actually, I've never seen Bridge of Spies.
Oh, wow. You're missing out. It's a good movie.
Really? Okay. That's the Autumn Shank one, right?
Obviously. Yes. Okay. High marks. Top marks.
That's what I do. All right. No, it's, I think it's one of Aaron Sorkin's, like, you know, better movies, I think, because it definitely had a little bit more comedy to it, I think, because of the characters in this movie.
That's where he's from. Oh, man.
Who?
Yahya Abdul-Mateen the second.
What the fuck?
What's his name?
Whose name?
Yahya Abdul.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen.
Aquaman.
No.
I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about right now.
Just the actor.
The Get Down?
I didn't see the Get Down. He's from Watchmen, though.
The show?
Oh, yes. Who plays Bobby Seale? Yes, he is from Watchmen. I never knew his name. Got it. I'm with you guys.
He's apparently in the new Matrix movie, and he's in Candyman. So,
right on.
Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Continue. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No. So, great cast. I did think it's a more... it was definitely, I think, a more approachable movie. Because it was not like, it wasn't like really dull. Obviously, these characters are fucking characters.
Capital CH, yeah.
Yeah. Especially that Abby guy. Jesus. But yeah, overall, good movie. What did you guys think?
I want to start off by saying that there were two people. I want you, I'm asking you guys a question. Which two actors in this movie did you guys think that I found unrecognizable?
Unrecognizable?
Like, I didn't know that's who they were.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Okay, that's one.
Okay, it's me too. I was like, what the fuck? That can't
really?
Be
him.
I never even put two and two together on that in my life. Never would.
Same. Nope.
So what's the other one?
Wow. I really did.
I hope it's not Michael Keaton.
No, fuck it. I will never confuse Michael Keaton.
He looks just like him.
I know, right?
He looks like Mike. Right.
Okay. I'm gonna also rule out Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, no. He just saw him in another movie.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, if anything.
Eddie Redmayne is definitely Eddie Redmayne.
No, Eddie Redmayne. That's the one. I always forget Eddie Redmayne's face. I always forget his fucking face.
How?
He's always in some period drama.
Stupid.
I always forget his fucking face. I never would have remembered that. Like, that's a pretty good actor. Is he a new actor? Like, no, he's not. He's Eddie fucking Redmayne. Two-time Oscar-winning guy or whatever. Like, oh, right.
That's nuts, man. That's
nuts for you, but to me, he's like a mishmash face. Like, he's not a real face.
Just because he has a mishmash face doesn't mean he is.
Well, just saying, just a forgettable face, even though he's a really good actor, at least in this movie. But all
he's
that aside,
fucking Newt's
all that aside,
Fantastic
Jesus Christ,
Beasts.
I know you said this is one of his better movies. I mean, top two. I don't know what.
Really?
Like, I mean, he's
what would
so
be the
good.
Other one?
Personally, it would be Social Network.
Okay,
I mean, Social Network is endlessly rewatchable. Half the reason because of the dialogue, and the other half is the awesome direction by Fincher. So, like, yeah, you can't go wrong with that movie ever. I think that's like his, for me, that's his like best movie written. But for a lot of people, it still is the courtroom drama original, which is A Few Good Men, which we just reviewed. So I would say that those are top ones right there. I really enjoyed what's the one he did with the skier, the
Molly's Game.
Molly's Game. That's right. We watched that.
You just enjoyed Molly.
Yeah, who doesn't enjoy Molly? But the dialogue, fucking Christ. Loved it. Loved it. And this guy is, I think he really excels at courtroom dramas. And he really punched it up in this one. He punched it the fuck up. And also, being local history for me, Chicago history, just added that extra something that just made this movie so much fun to watch. I just enjoyed every second of it. And it's not a movie that you don't pay attention to. You pay attention to this movie. And not that it's hard to do it, by the way. It's not like a hard movie to pay attention to, but it requires you to do so. It's not a background movie whatsoever. It's easy to watch and all that, but it requires the attention. I'm saying that because I was interrupted a couple of times, just simple conversation or whatever. And I had to rewind because I didn't want to miss a single line, or I missed some sort of point in the scene or something. So, and I did. I went back 2 seconds or 10 seconds, whatever the button says. And it was great. I mean, this movie is top notch. It's top notch. It just starts off running, too. It's great. It just fucking starts. I loved it. Loved it. Yeah, that's what I feel.
Perfect. I was like, oh, man, I was hoping to myself, like, I hope I'm not the only one that fucking likes this movie.
Nah, man, I don't think so. I mean, you got another one here. So, Raph, what did you think?
This is a movie.
Making me sigh.
I know, buddy. I know. No, this was I liked it. This was a good movie. I agree. I agree with basically what you guys are saying. What I enjoyed was the lighthearted tone of a serious thing.
Serious chapter in our Black history.
Yeah, it was just like what's crazy is like this. I just felt like I was going to watch a very serious movie when I first started. And just the name of the movie also. I was like, ugh, Jesus, kind of intimidating.
It sounds like that Memphis
Memphis
movie.
3?
Yeah, it sounds like the Memphis 3 movie, right? Super serious. Not that it isn't. It is very fucking serious.
Right. So, like, I just felt like that. I was like, oh my God, what am I getting into? And when I watched it, I was like, this is, like, more light than I expected. But at the same time, it's very serious. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing, like, not to take away from anything like it, but like you said, the dialogue is there. I mean, just the first meeting with when they're meeting with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, and they're just talking about like we want to prosecute these guys, right?
There's no chance in hell they're not going to get prosecuted, right?
Right, exactly. When like just that alone is like that meeting alone right there is fucking chock full of everything you're going to get in the rest of the movie. That's just Aaron Sorkin at his best, I think. Having this kind of back and forth with these characters who just feel, everybody feels like they're all their own characters. Like everyone's a character here. No, everyone feels unique enough to be them. And obviously the cast, they're all cast really well too. Everyone's kind of put themselves out there as like, you know, as a very unique stance. So I don't know. I really did enjoy the movie though. I had fun watching it in a fun way to, as I can say. It was just very easy 2 hours. Like, yeah. I think it's shy of 2 hours, but it's whatever. Easy. Yeah, no, 2 hours. 2 hours and 10 minutes. So, like, easy 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like, just, I just didn't, it didn't even feel like it was dragging or anything like that. And at the same time, it was kind of cool to watch and then to see how they shot the movie as well. So, I mean, I think Aaron Sorkin did a great job.
That he fucking did. He really did. I agree. You know, that early scene where Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, who plays the prosecutor, am I right? Right? That's what he plays. Mm-hmm. Not big on the lawyer stuff. Prosecutor. That whole backroom pre-talk, you know, that's supposed to set the end game at the beginning. The fact that it's there kind of talks about how many and much of the dealings in, not just government, but companies and other things in general, were done that way. You know, I'm not saying they're not done anymore. They're done less, but that used to be much more of a staple. That kind of conversation he has with the AG, right? The attorney general. And that coupled with the fact that it's like a doom thing. It's telling you, you know, it's like, it's telling you that there's no way they're getting out of it in the beginning of the movie. And which prompts me to ask this question to you two. How much of real life did you know about this movie before watching it?
Nada.
Ralph?
Some.
The only thing I know about is the riots.
Yeah.
That they actually happened.
Basically the riots.
I know about the Chicago riots. I know about Hubert Humphrey. You know, he lost. He lost twice, I believe, in two different presidential runs. I don't think in a row, but I think he did lose twice. So that's rare. But I knew about the riots themselves, but I did not know this whole trial thing. And Lexi made fun of me for that. Like, oh, that you knew all about Chicago. I'm like, no, I don't. I can't know everything about everything. But I didn't know.
You lived during that time, so.
Nice. That's very good. Doesn't mean I still watch the news, though. So, yeah. So I was. I think not knowing, like we all did, the end result, right? Which we're gonna have a spoiler session. I know it's real life, but this isn't a documentary, so we're gonna have a spoiler session. How the movie makes you want to have hope, right, for these guys to get out in some fashion or get out, not scot-free, but maybe scot-free, but or get out with like a much lesser, harsher sentence, right? Even though like the FBI seemingly wants their fucking head on a spike. And I thought the way the conversations lean into all these types of things about the political landscape, about Vietnam, all these conversations about the upsets and the nature of why they're there and why they're being on trial, you know, just the nature of it. I love how Aaron Sorkin gets into all of this. He's always been, I mean, you guys have seen The West Wing. No? Okay, fine. I have seen The West Wing. I know Rob has seen. Yeah, sure. I've almost memorized. I love the show. It's one of my favorite shows to rewatch. It's one of those comfort shows for me, especially nowadays, you know, seeing as a as something that will never happen because of the way it is now. But The West Wing is like, I mean, it's his baby also, and he clearly shows his political stand viewpoints on a lot of issues. And so it's no surprise that he's on this side of the seven, right? And the way just he lets you in on that point of view through this dialogue and through this crackling, awesome acting going on back and forth, totally sold me on it and enhanced more on that chapter of Chicago history and the country's history too. So yeah, I couldn't enjoy this movie anymore, is my point. But that sucks that none of us knew the history on this particular point. Maybe we didn't pay attention in school, or maybe it wasn't taught to us. I don't know.
We live in Chicago. Why the hell would they talk about it?
Well, they should. I mean, come on. The kids grow up knowing their own shit. Like, yeah. That's common. That should be common. I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere.
Common is a rapper from Chicago.
Look at him.
Drop the mic, sir, and let's get into spoilers, unless you guys want to talk about something else before. No?
No, I think we're ready for spoilers.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't know if you guys were pausing for the spoilers.
Sorry.
All right, spoilers starting now.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to clarify something for the jurors. There are two Hoffmans in this courtroom, the defendant, Abby Hoffman, and myself, Judge Julius Hoffman.
Thank you, sir.
I didn't want there to be confusion on the matter.
Man, I don't think there's much chance they're going to mix us up.
You will address this court as judge or your honor, and you will not address this court until... You will not address this court!
The defendants would tell you they represent three different groups.
And the record should reflect that Defendant Hoffman and I are not related.
Father, no.
Mr. Hoffman, are you familiar with contempt of court?
It's practically a religion for me, sir.
Dude, Sacha Baron Cohen, I can't believe it. He's such a good actor.
Yeah,
right?
I keep forgetting he's very a good nice. Actor. Honestly, he keeps surprising me. I remember after Borat, he did another one that was like Borat. What was the name of it? Like Bruno or something?
Yeah.
But besides that, I know he would appear in bit parts like Sweeney Todd. Remember him in Sweeney Todd?
Nope.
No.
Okay. Well, I do.
I don't remember Sweeney Todd anyways. So.
The Tim Burton movie? You never saw it?
I've seen it. I just don't remember much.
Okay. He plays the barber. He competes with the other barber. Like just him and Johnny Depp are like shaving. Yeah, he's the competition in that one scene, and before he gets his fucking slit open. I remember seeing that movie, and I was like, "That's pretty good." I mean, he's crazy, he's over the top, but just like Sacha Baron Cohen, as you might imagine. But coming out of Borat, I'm like, he really fit well in that movie. And then I saw him in something else. I can't remember that. I could look it up, but I remember I saw him in a couple of other things here and there. And I'm like, man, he's a pretty good actor. He just blends into that character really well, and he did it again here. I didn't fucking recognize him.
Yeah, no, same.
He's the star, in my opinion, and I think he's meant to be.
Yeah, I think so too. I recognized him right away. I mean, I saw him. I was like, "That's Sacha Baron Cohen." I was like, "Yeah, with that throw," and that's right away.
That throw.
I mean, it was, and I was like, "Yo, that's fucking crazy," and I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And then just how he was talking, I was like, "Yo, this actually role fits him really well." I think he's knocking it out of the park. But I knew it was him the whole time. But I do agree, he did a great job.
No, he's too good. He's really good.
He's too good.
He is too good. It's like he really commands that the presence of that whole thing.
Yeah,
he really does. And his line delivery is perfect. He does it. It's all perfectly timed. Like it all looks like a reaction that he's having, and then saying the reaction, the remark in return. In just the right amount of time.
When he's on the stand.
Yeah, it's great.
He's like, he goes, I've never been, he's like, well, give me a minute because I've never been questioned for my thoughts. And right. Like, and that's a beautiful answer because it's like somebody who's very confident in themselves, who's obviously a very smart person, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, knows to say that he doesn't know how to answer that, but he doesn't say, I don't know how to answer that. Without being pressured and saying that, you know what I'm saying, like coming out like an idiot.
Yeah, it's a very good honest answer,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just love that when he said it. I was like, man, that's like so smart. That's like a very smart, honest answer to do. Like, but it makes you look not like an idiot. It makes you sound very intelligent for saying that and honest with yourself.
Yeah, and for me, the true hidden message, the gem of the message in this movie that I think Aaron Sorkin is. You know, very careful about like highlighting is that all of the people on trial, including the eighth person, right? The one that got acquitted for it.
Yeah,
right?
Bobby Seale.
Bobby Seale, right? They're all after the same thing.
Yeah.
They all look different. They all act different. They all do it differently, but they're all after the same thing. And that's really a good message because That's how we see it today. Except that the problem is that a lot of people see the difference between Abby and Eddie Redmayne's character. I don't remember his name. Like a lot of people would see that as the enemies. They would see each other as enemies, even though they're both after the same thing. And it feels like that kind of difference would make it a big, a bigger problem nowadays than it would have back then. And it's a bigger issue now because people's differences are all that people value each other for. Like, that's all people care about. It's like, you're different than me, fuck off. And I really like how the movie really puts them together, and it really shows you through the movie itself, you know, the whole Vietnam thing, the whole reason they're there protesting, the reason they went to Chicago, all that stuff is about one singular problem, one singular purpose, which is Vietnam. And it's great that it's Vietnam, because with everything that's been going on, from the Five Bloods to the Vietnam documentary by, what's the guy, the...
Ken Burns.
Ken Burns, thank you. By Ken Burns, and everything in between the decades, honestly, has shown you that what a fiasco fuck-up that we were there, we shouldn't have been there. Everyone agrees to that now. It's something that wasn't agreed to back then, but everyone understands that it was a huge mistake that we went, and a huge loss of life. So seeing that now, this movie, today, this year, that under such a righteous banner, all these different people in different sizes and shapes and colors, like, banding together for this thing, should be seen as a great source of, like, as a future, like a good thing, like a positive thing.
Right.
But the movie does show that it can't, it also cannot be. It could be the problem that makes it worse, right? I loved it. Just loved it. The movie did a good job of that.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you guys want to highlight or talk about now that we're spoiler-free here?
Oh, I think we just highlighted Sacha Baron Cohen, but okay.
Yeah, amazing actor.
Yeah.
10 out of 10. Give that man an Oscar.
Well, I have a question for you guys. What did you guys think of the stance of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character?
You, what do you mean? Like,
so, like, so he, because, you know, he's the prosecutor, and he's, like, basically, like, because obviously he's young, so he's, like, their age, if I'm correct, right? Maybe a little older than them, like, than the guys who are being, you know.
Maybe older than the Eddie Redmayne's character, but.
Yeah, maybe older than him, for sure.
But younger
around than Sacha Baron Cohen's age, I would say, in the movie.
John Carroll Lynch, though.
right, that's a different story. But what do you guys think of his character overall, like, not like, I don't think it's a transformation, because I think he's always been, he was kind of the same at all times. Even in the beginning when he challenges the, what's it called, the Attorney General, was it?
You mean in the beginning?
In the beginning, when he challenges them,
yes.
You're like, what are you talking about? There's going to be huge blowback, huge this, like, you know, it's going to
be. Yeah, you talk about the public appearance.
It's like
of
he obviously
thing.
Has like a pulse, right? He obviously knows what's going on in the country compared
to
what his older, you know, bosses think.
Yeah. I think the best scene for him that I think encapsulates him as a character is a scene where Abby and the other guy, I don't remember his name, meet with him outside the courtroom with his two daughters.
Oh, yeah.
I think that tells you everything you need to know about him. And that to say that he is a good person, I think he does have values very similar to what they're feeling. Now, I'm not talking about Vietnam specifically here. I'm talking about as a person, right? Like, he's not an asshole. But he isn't between a rock and a hard place where he is ordered to do something that he wouldn't necessarily agree with.
Right.
Right. So the way he handles the conversation, not just in that scene, but in that meeting earlier in the movie, or throughout the courtroom, some stuff, you know, some of the things in there. Like, he has to handle that deftly, where he doesn't look like he's on their side, but also looks like he's standing up for the government.
Right.
And I think, I think they wrote him really well to do the way he is able to weave and bob away from, you know, either being fired or being hated.
I 100% agree. That's why I actually liked his character a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Just for the fact that I felt like also another scene where he asked for motion to, like, try the, what's his name, separate.
Bobby Seale, yeah.
And he's like, no, I motioned it. That's if he got beat up, right? Is that the same scene? Am I correct? He was held. He's like, I'm motioning, whatever. And you're like, and the guy's like, no, like, I don't want to. Well, by the way, that judge just got off. We'll get to the judge in a little
bit. Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're going to get to that fucking judge.
Yeah, 100%. So, but, like, I just felt like he's obviously like, yo, like, I'm here for this. We're not here for anything extra. And even he sees, like, just, like, there's a level of injustice. And he's all about it. Like, I feel like he's a very American patriotic guy, you know,
yeah.
And he's there for his country and everything. But at the same time, people are misconstruing of what can be patriotic and whatnot. And I feel like he's like just that almost bridge between both worlds. Even though it's really not there to see for everybody, but at the same time, I think Aaron Sorkin makes it kind of that way, even in a minor way. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like physique and acting style in general kind of gives him roles where he's a very strict, straightforward, you know, like almost not robotic, but like, you know, by the rules kind of guy. That's what he's cast for. He's perfect for it. And with the glasses, it fits so well on him. You should just cap glasses all the time like that for all his movies. I just think that, you know, it's like I think he was trying to like show how the government can win this case, but they don't have to be sore winners about it, where they have to push people under the bus along the way. And that really humanized him in my viewpoint when he helped get Bobby Seale out of that fucking trial, you know.
Right.
That was really good for him because it made me not. It's easy to paint villains as just one broad brush of villainy, and Aaron Sorkin made sure that gave him some shades of other things as well. So it's good. I liked it. Yeah, of course. You know, it's not like JFK, where in JFK the prosecutor is just pure evil. You just hate the guy. It's not like that.
That's true.
Right? Like, you know, pure distrustful asshole. Yeah. Like, no, that's not this guy. It's great. I loved it. Yeah. Should we talk about the judge now? Or
oh, what a piece of shit.
What do you think of him, Luke? I mean, besides
total
being
piece of shit.
Besides a piece of shit.
He is inept. He can't even do it. He doesn't even know people's names. He
can't even fucking
but
say
God it. Forbid you mistake his name with someone else's name, he will make a clear distinction to the jury.
Father! Sorry.
He is a piece of fucking shit. He should not be a judge.
No. But obviously they picked the right judge, though, to do the case if the government wanted to win, right? Like, talk about... Look, so there's a few moments of hope in this movie, right? Where, like, especially when they get the old AG, this is where fucking Michael Keaton comes into play, right? Yeah. I mean, he looks like the saving grace. And me, not knowing the history of Chicago, like, the way I guess I'm supposed to know, I thought that this would do this irrevocable turn against the government, or at least against the prosecutor's case, right? I really thought it was going to do all that. And they had him on the stand, and they're like, and they started introducing this thing where the fucking jury's not there, and I'm like, oh, where or how is this going? Maybe, you know, and you still have the hope. And the way this judge, his existence, is so foul that the old AG is not powerful enough to get through him. And by that, I mean that he was always going to do whatever he was going to do from day one, regardless of who was going to be on that stand. And right. That's the really sad other kind of thing that the movie kind of secretly highlights, is that it's the judge you get. That.
Yeah, you know what? I agree 100%.
Right, you know what I'm talking about. It's like Wire, right?
I do agree with you, yeah. And it's like handpicked judge. They picked it on purpose because they know he's going to...
Because who fucking allows the motions or disallows? You know, like, that's the guy.
Right, right.
He's king of the castle. You can't pass go. You cannot collect $200 with that guy. You know? And it doesn't matter how incompetent he looks. It doesn't matter how even racist he can look, or nefarious he can look, or biased, which judges are not supposed to be biased. All these things he can look. He's wearing that robe. He's in that chair. What he says goes, regardless of how he acts. That's why we've seen in many other real life docuseries or whatever of other cases of people, like, you know, documenting these judges, and the way they're acting and saying these things, they could say whatever it still passes.
Right.
That's still law, his sentence, you know? Yeah. It's insane.
Well, aren't judges elected, though?
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm mistaken,
the
they are elected.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. So we just had the voting, and it's like, I don't know any of the judges. Like, that's not a thing people can look up.
Right. Mm.
I'm sure it can. I mean,
well, you can't. Like,
it's not easily accessible. It's like, something that normally would be like, hey, I can click this and I can click where they fall on this and that. There's none of that. You'd have to actually manually look for somebody who actually wrote an article or is telling you about them themselves. There's no actual like post on judges.com or .gov or whatever that tells you, you know, the
judges. Non.orgs that do probably provide that information to better help people. Who thinks of that? Who thinks of that? Who thinks of that? I bet you most people don't think that judges are appointed that way. You know, or at least in certain areas or counties, maybe it depends on the county. I don't know how it really works either myself. I'm not very savvy either, but I know that they are elected too, or they're appointed by someone who gets elected, something like that. But yeah, it sucks. It's really a roll of the dice kind of thing. And obviously in this case, I think it was loaded dice, right? They were going to lose no matter what. But man, what a great cast. It's very conflicting, like oil and water is everywhere. And just I love all the conversation between them. What do you guys think of the way the movie uses the flashback method, you know, of getting the whole story? Do you guys, my point is that, did you guys feel like you got the entire story, everything you would have needed or wanted? Or did you, did you want more?
I think it worked for what they showed.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say no to more, though.
Yeah, I would agree. I felt like the movie wanted to say more, but at the same time, it also did a nice, like, we're going to wrap it.
Yeah. We'll get a Snyder cut in a couple years.
Shut up. Yeah, because, I mean, a movie that overstays its welcome is way worse than one that leaves early. Way worse. So I'm glad that it didn't overstay its welcome. And obviously, not for me, because I'm a big Sorkin fan. We're all Sorkin fans. But, like, most people don't know who the fuck he is. So, like, I'm talking about in the possibility, in a universe where Aaron Sorkin is allowed to make more movies, I'd rather his movies be successful.
You know Sorkin? What is that? Is that a Pokemon?
That's a Pokemon. Yeah, no, that's a Pokemon. It evolves from Electabuzz's cousin, I think. Check it out. Don't quote me on that. But yeah.
Sorkin is definitely, like, a bird type.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. You could combine those, you know. You could combine things. There's, like, multiple types for... Okay. You know, you're not real. You didn't even know what an onyx is. Anything else on this movie in general? Like, I mean, it sucks that they went to jail and all that. But yeah. And those two guys, the two people that barely had lines in them.
Oh, yeah.
They were just the ones that.
The father one?
Right. The two younger ones. You know what I'm talking about? Because it was really the trial out of the five.
Honestly, I'm like, wait, I only thought about five of them. I'm like, wait, there was this guy's...
That's my point. Because the other two were like there as ways to like let them go so they can feel better about the sentencing of the other five.
Right. So it was two... And then they said it was two...
Yeah.
What's it called? And then who were two, just like, gonna, like, let them go, saying like, oh, well, we let two of them go, guys.
Yeah. There's a term they mentioned that they said. I don't remember what it
they
was.
They did. I just forgot what it was.
Yeah. But yeah, that's also like that happens also a lot in history, which is also very fucked up and weird and sad and manipulative too. Very openly manipulative, right? Like it's supremely sad. All these things that happen in courtrooms. Man, love this movie. I really will watch this movie again. His movies are totally ready to be rewatched. That's the beautiful thing about Aaron Sorkin movies. I mean, I must have seen Steve Jobs and Social Network like 30 times.
Nerd.
Yeah, nerd. Totally. Sorkin nerd. All right. That's all I have on it. Anything you want to highlight or mention before we forget or any thing like that?
The whole world is watching.
All right. So he's got nothing. Ross?
No. I think
all right. Well, we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we're going to review our second movie of the evening, which is what, Luke?
Black Box.
That's right. So find out what that's about and stay with us.
Who's there?
You need breakfast.
I'm fine.
I wasn't asking.
Nolan Wright, involved in a car accident, resulting in the death of his wife.
Is there anyone else who can pick you up?
He's just running a little late today.
And severe memory loss.
If this happens again, we're going to have to notify child services.
I believe that I can reverse your condition.
We should give it a shot, right?
Come with me, please. We call this headset the Black Box. An immersive virtual pathway to your memories. I like to begin with something I call the safe room. When you push the crown of the watch, you will be in your subconscious. Are you ready?
After losing his wife and his memory in a car accident, a single father undergoes an agonizing experimental treatment that causes him to question who he really is. Black Box, 2020.
What do you have to say, 2020?
I don't know.
Is there another movie called The Black Box? I feel like there is.
I'm assuming.
Probably?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a common name.
Am I thinking of that Richard Kelly movie? Or is that called something else? I know something with Box. Maybe The Box. Maybe this guy wrong. Cool. Black Box. Sorry, this is your game.
There's like,
starring a bunch of people I don't know, directed by a guy whose name I can't pronounce.
You should try.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Emmanuel?
Good start. Good start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Osei? Osei Cooper? Osei, can you see? Can you see?
Osei Canseco?
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Good attempt.
Yeah.
A for effort.
And yeah.
So, who's the star? Do you know?
A guy.
Do you know?
Mamoudou Atli. So bad.
How about the rest of them?
Felicia Rashad, Amanda Christine, Tossin something.
This is great.
Shut up. Troy James. Yeah, good old Troy James.
Good old Han Soto. Yeah.
Two first names.
Right.
Anyways. What did you guys think of this movie, Oscar?
Me? Okay. If you couldn't tell before, he just woke up. Right. What did I think of Black Box? I think it's an... And by the way, we should say that the spoiler should be when he finds out, you know, that one thing halfway through the movie. You know what I'm talking about, right, guys?
Yes.
I figure that's a perfect
thingamajig
spoiler, right, section. Like, that's where it separates. I think this is a, I think it's a fine, serviceable movie. I don't think it has a lot to offer. Now, I do think that it has some things to offer in general. It has some things that are like thinking points, like, what would you do? Or how would you react? How would you, you know, because this is about a personal thing. You know, it's a family matter. This guy is having, he's kind of like Leonard Shelby in Memento. You know, everyone has to deal with his problem all the time. You know what I mean? He has his memory problem where he doesn't remember before the accident very well. Right. Not quite. Like Leonard Shelby, mind you, he does have short-term memory, but it's from a horrible accident, and it causes them, you know, these side effects, and very, you know, this could be easily a drama movie, but it really is set up to be a thriller from the beginning, actually, because of these dreams and these things he goes on with hypnosis or something to try to recover the memories. It's very interesting stuff overall. However, I think it's just fine because. You know, Black Mirror did a much better job of this, like three or four episodes of their many episodes. I feel like I watched an extended version of a Black Mirror episode. It has almost like one-to-one the same amount of criteria, you know, when it comes to the kind of stories they tell, the kind of like technology involved, the kind of personal story within it. And unfortunately, it does not... merit anything higher than a good episode of Black Mirror, which is unfortunate because if Black Mirror didn't exist,
what season was that?
Which one? About what?
Of Black Mirror.
That I'm talking about?
I saw some of it, but I don't...
Well, I'd rather not spoil it, because it kind of ruins it, too, if I say it, and I don't remember exactly, but it happens a few times. There's a few versions of it in the show.
Gotcha.
Anyway, and since it doesn't meet... And if Black Mirror hadn't existed, this movie might be a little better, but I think ultimately I would have seen it as an interesting sci-fi movie. And, like a little sci-fi personal story. But that's it. Yeah,
I'm going to agree with you. I did definitely think it was more of a thriller than like a horror movie or whatever, which I thought that was a little weird because, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be horror because it is around Halloween, but it's still good.
I mean, this is our Halloween episode.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's not because we're not really doing it, but this is the last one before Halloween comes out. So.
It was okay. There's nothing crazy. There's nothing. The movie was actually, I guess, I hate to say it, but plainer than I thought it was going to be. Very much like I kind of, when there's a twist, I kind of like foresaw some of it, or most of it. And then, as far as the, I like the concept overall. I mean, it was cool, but I also felt like, I don't know. I felt like I was wanting more, and it's definitely not horror. I get the horror element, but I would say it's definitely more thriller, and I'm surprised it's not marked as a thriller or something like that. So,
yeah,
but I mean, I didn't hate the movie, but I'm also just like, I'm indifferent about it. Like it's, yeah. I mean, I could see the Metacritic score, and this is like a 62. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
How about you, Luke?
How about me? What?
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
No, I thought it was an okay movie. Kind of saw where it was going to go, in a way. So.
Oh, you did? Like all the points?
Nothing groundbreaking. Nothing what?
All of the plot points? You look at me like that? You knew where it was going to...
That's like all of them, but I'm like, oh, I don't want to say it. So, but I had a feeling that that's where it was going to go. How and everything, you know, that was, you know, left up to, you know, how it was going to play out. But I had a good idea of that was going to be it.
I guess before we get into spoilers,
I don't want to say it without spoiling.
We should get to spoilers pretty fast, just in case. And this is not like a big tentpole movie either, even among streaming. This is the kind of movie that comes out in January, February. It could be fun to watch, but it's not like set to be like a blockbuster money making thing either. You know, think of it that way. Before COVID times, that's the theater release it would get. Again, not to say it's bad. It has some qualities, good qualities. My question for you guys, before we get to spoilers, is that did you find all the setup in the movie believable? And by that, I mean, like, did you believe that the power of hypnosis could render this poor man in this horrible situation to find these memories? And likewise, with the rest of the movie, like with the little girl, do you find the little girl believable? Things like that. Things in the movie that keep the movie going forward. Was there anything like too like embellished or whatever?
I think the hypnosis was kind of we'll just say, you know, hypnosis did it, that kind of thing. It was kind of a cheap way to start it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Although, like, in the end of the movie, though, I did like how they had, like, it was more tech-oriented, how it's, like, there was programming and things of that nature and backups and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, involved.
All right. Raph, what about you? Did you find this movie believable? With the setup, I mean.
Yes and no. Like... Hmm. I I want to find it believable, but at the same time, the movie doesn't give me enough context clues to know where we are in the movie. Future, possible. Near future. Current. Feels like it's current. Stuff like that in that aspect. So, like, I just feel like it doesn't seem too believable, especially kind of as, like, I don't know. Some of it didn't feel too believable. And I know the movie's like, it feels low budget because it feels like very three sets designs. And then, so yeah.
The hospital, the house, the car.
Like, the science behind it. And then right, exactly. And then I also find that, like, the, as far as the, not the technology, but of how, like, the memory stuff and the backup stuff, it seemed to be pretty rapid considering what consciousness probably should take up in memory wise. I don't know, but that's my little nitpicks of it. So, like, I guess I somewhat believable if the movie kind of makes lands for you. If not, I mean, I don't think you would.
Okay. The tech and the hypnosis thing, clearly kind of, it felt like a crutch. Like a very simple Hollywood version of, like, this is the mechanic of the movie. That, you know, they don't put too much effort into, like, figuring out if it's true or if it can actually help with memory that way or that well or that fast or anything like that. Because it's a Hollywood movie, right? It's a movie. And tons of movies do this. They use a shortcut to do of something to move the plot forward or make the plot the main thing or whatever the hell. Think of, like, I don't know, what's that M. Night movie? Split, right? The way he uses that. Misremembering things. Whatever the main dude had as a disability, you know, to just, like, make this into a plot point for the movie that doesn't actually exist, you know, things like that. What I found kind of harder to believe was a little girl for me. In the 6 months or so since his accident, you know, the movie goes along pretty well. I liked the little girl overall, but I forgot her name. I don't have the information in front of me. I found her trying, like, I think she was speaking, like, for a writer. Like, it felt like her things were written for her rather than, I believe, a little girl who's trying to be headstrong and trying to help her dad would actually be able to say those things half the time. And I'm talking about with her father remembering things and with the thing with the teachers and you know, like what to eat dinner and what to make dinner, like all this stuff felt a little too, I don't know, felt a little too scripted. You know what I'm saying, guys? So I didn't find that super believable. Like, she's trying to, like, she's growing up beyond her years. That's what the movie's showing you. And I didn't think that she sounded really like a little girl that would do that. So,
right.
Yeah, but you know, kids are smarter than they are too. Some of them, it is a big environment thing. But it did feel, I did feel that way too, though, the way you're saying it. That felt more believable, like the little girl kind of, like, needed to adult up. But it also did feel like it was, like, pretty, like, scripted in that aspect of, like, forced. I guess forced was the right word.
Forced. All right, so let's get into spoilers for Black Box because it is pretty much on a big fucking thing in it. So let's do it right now.
Rachel. What the hell was in there?
It's your brain trying to protect you from your trauma.
Did things go well with Dr. Brooks today?
I saw my wedding.
That's progress right there. Yeah.
If that thing shows up again, you just say to yourself, I run my mind, it does not run me.
I run my mind, it doesn't run me. I run my mind. It doesn't run me.
Patients are often surprised by what they remember.
Did Rachel and I live in an apartment?
I don't think so.
The place was really familiar.
You're getting close. Stay with this.
Did we ever fight?
It's not what you think. You would never hurt Rachel.
What's going on?
We're close. I can sense it.
You just need to remember who you are.
I run my mind. It doesn't run me.
All right, since most likely people are still listening who have not seen this movie, Luke, what is this big spoiler thing that happens?
Oh, man. So there's this dude that got, like, dead, and then his mom is, like, the super-ass doctor. She got, like, his brainwaves and put him in other dude's head.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's brain swapping.
Brainception.
Or brain implanting or something like that. And, of course, the Black Mirror, immediately I thought of Black Mirror when that came up. And the episode I thought of was mainly the last one of the last ones, one of the later ones they did. That museum episode. You guys know what I'm talking about? I think it's called Black Mirror? The Black Museum. Black Mirror, Black Museum, something
I didn't
museum.
See it. I think I saw like the first season of it, and then maybe a bit of season two.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah. You guys are sorely behind on that. I really watched the fuck out of those episodes. Anyway. In it, it's about many episodes. It's about a bunch of, it's basically short stories within that bigger story in that episode. And in one of them, it's like, I mean, it's not one-to-one. It's definitely more stylized in Black Mirror. But it's about like, you know, this this couple, right? The wife goes through an accident and she's like in a coma forever, right? And so they transfer her brain on with him. And so they're both working in the same brain together. Things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's cruel and also fucked up because, as you can imagine, that's problematic if you're hearing two voices, right? Or a voice in your head that you don't want. And there's other ones too. Like I think of the one that the guy, you know, a lot of dead going on, a lot of people who died, and this is how they get to be back again. So, my main problem was that once you find out that the main character isn't the main character you thought he was, which is a cool concept. I think that the movie kind of like does a disservice to this character who is abusive, you know, who in his past, before he died, he was an abusive asshole, right, to his actual still alive wife or ex-wife or ex-girlfriend and daughter. And I think that they're a disservice to him because we actually could never actually empathize with him very well. I know we've been watching him the whole time, but not only did he not know what he was or who he was, is that we also thought he was someone else. So it feels more like a betrayal once we find out who he is. And the actual character that the body's supposed to be, we only technically meet him for 1 minute at the end. Right. So we don't know him either. All we know is that he's a saint and he treated his wife with so, you know, like we don't know, you know, really. And I feel like in the end, we just ended up with no protagonist. That's how I actually felt.
You're not wrong.
Right. So, and I think the movie kind of wrote itself into a hole. I mean, there are ways to write yourself out of this particular problem, but the movie didn't do it to me. And that's why I kind of felt like this movie's fine. It's okay. You know, but that's a huge problem for me. What about you guys? What would you guys think of the twist and how it ended?
The mom from the Cosby Show went off the fucking rails in her older years.
Yeah, as one devoted mother,
I was like, "Why is she so familiar? I know her from somewhere." And I'm like, "Oh,
you didn't recognize her?"
I
did immediately. Okay,
yeah, I just wasn't completely sure because then she was also in Creed recently, and I remember her from that too.
That's true. Yes. Michael B. Jordan's, right? Mom? Or mom. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what did you think, though? Did you like it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
It just seems like really convenient, like, oh, you know, so you were brain dead, and then, you know, she took you in, and then all of a sudden you were back, and I'm like... If you're kind of brain dead, you I had issues believing, like, can a brain that sustained some type of damage, like for the guy that fell first, was thrown down the stairs or fell down the stairs, would they be able to actually extract his, you know, consciousness or whatever? And B, like, to implant into someone else's, you know, also damaged brain, you know, it's like, copying from a corrupt hard drive and, you know, pasting it to a corrupt hard drive.
Yeah. And there's no San Junipero for him while he waits for this other host either. That's another Black Mirror episode. Check it out.
You're just pitching Black Mirror here.
I am. It's just it reminds me of so much better stories. It's just not good for the movie. Right. You know what it feels like? What's that movie from last year? Something Burn, about this kid who's like Superman, but he's evil. But it's a boy. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know.
Blackburn? Does that sound right? Something Burn? You guys know what I'm talking about, that movie. It was a movie of the week.
I didn't Black see Burn it.
Or that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it came out last year. I thought, even though it was really schlocky, but the horror was kind of fun and gory, too. I liked it, personally. I thought it was a cool concept. An evil Superman. Imagine if, you know, Clark Kent arrived and he was evil right from the beginning. That movie would have been way better if The Boys hadn't come out. You know?
Right.
Which came out that year, The Boys on Amazon. And if it hadn't, I wouldn't know, with all the, you know, the movie effects of today clashing with another story that's way better, that has the same movie effects of today. You know, like, right. this is this problem too. And I said Blackburn does it better because they have more money and all that stuff. But like, you know, and that's sucks. But I just couldn't help myself. It just felt like one of those episodes. I'm sorry for the movie, but damn. But the reveal though was cool in general. But if you're talking about like, is it believable this could happen? Well, I mean, that's the philosophical question that the movie probably wants you to ask. But no, it's not probably not true now, but maybe right. We're close to that.
And is it just me or is it disappointing that like nothing happened to the mom? They're just like, oh, like, no, she was able to continue doing on whatever at the very end?
What did you want to happen to her?
There was like no consequence for her. She was still programming like the next thing.
Oh, the mom. Oh, sorry. I thought you meant.
No, it wasn't. She got kicked out.
Yeah, she got like on trial and she got like disbarred and shit.
Yeah,
she probably went to jail. She probably went to jail.
No, because she was still working on the next version of the thing.
Oh, that's right. At the very end. You're right. She was working from home. That's right. But she got disbarred. Working
from home, but it's like her. It's her property. Like she worked. That's her.
Yeah, it's her IP. It's her IP, right?
I birthed this kid. I have all the.
I made you. I can unmake you. I don't know. It's also kind of a weird ending because it looks like it wants to set up another. I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah, right. Like, we don't need a sequel.
Movies. I hate when
Blacker Box. That.
I don't know.
Blacker Box.
The blackest box. That's the third one.
So stupid. It sounds kind of raunchy.
It does kind of sound really bad. It sounds like a porn for sure. From 2002. All right.
You read my porno journal.
Clearly, I did. Clearly. Yeah, I don't know. I cared so little about that. I forgot about it until you. I thought you were talking about the other mom. I didn't know. That's how much I forgot about that scene there at the end. I don't know. The reveal, did it work for you, even though, you know, despite the believability of it?
I thought it was cool, like how they did with the monster thing, where it was like a reversal kind of thing, always. And then, so the reveal, I guess, I mean, like I said, it was, I mean, kind of beat you over the head that it was going to come. But yeah, I guess overall it worked. I just didn't like how it just like, I guess finally clicked in. But overall, like the fact that it was something, you know,
I mean, yeah. I mean, the movie does acknowledge brain damage on both sides, both the abusive ex-husband or dead husband, whatever, and the good guy, right? Whatever, who is, you know, also coma, not anymore, whatever it really is. They show the brain damage because, for example, like, she thought this guy was dead that she was putting her son into, and he still had remnants in there. That's the whole point of the horror element of the movie, right? That's where that faceless dude comes at him and stuff like that. It was him all along, and that's kind of cool, making the monster be not the hero necessarily, but the victim. That's kind of a cool twist that a lot of movies, you know, kind of fail at doing. This movie did too, because they barely showed him, but it's tried, and that was kind of cool. It's kind of rare to see, but it tried showing the brain damage. But I think the ultimate failure of this movie is that, and I don't know how they would have done this. I'm not going to write the movie for them or anything, but they should have really let us know who this abusive, I forget all these names, by the way, this abusive ex-husband guy was before he died. But like not in a, I mean, I know they did really good job, a really good job, actually. Once he figured out who he was and he tried to work it out and then how easily he couldn't. Like, I know that they showed a lot. They explained a lot there in those little scenes. But right. Had we known about him before the reveal in some fashion, I don't know how, I think we would have been sold on this on that twist a lot better, and we would be on the movie side a lot more. But since it all happened in the last 20 minutes, I don't think I bought the movie. It did too little too late, you know? And I just didn't care.
Yeah, even I give with two his, shits about him.
Yeah, like, even shit. With his decision to, you know, give the wheel back to the original owner, it was like, nah, I don't, whatever. Cool. Just happy ending it, I guess. I mean, it would have been probably cooler to make it a fucked up ending, I guess. Right. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, anyway. But that's all I got in the movie, personally. But whatever, you know, the movie does ask a lot of, like, philosophical questions. I don't know if you guys had any of those. Two out of five. I think I gave it like two also, or two and a half, I think. Because, you know, it did try. I didn't love it. I didn't like it or anything. But, yeah. Anything else on the Black Box? Also, not a very good title.
No.
Not a very good title. Because it kind of, I kind of want to know more about the creation of this technology and stuff like that now.
I thought automatically, like, Black Box would have something to do with, like, a plane's black box that records all the...
That's what I thought, too, when you first picked the movie, because I had no idea what I was walking into, and I quickly dismissed that. And then once they mentioned it, I'm like, oh, okay.
Could be like, the brain box.
Right, the brain box. Should have called it something else. I don't know what. So it's not a very good title, in my opinion.
No.
Raf, you have anything else on the movie?
Nah, not really. All right, I want to, but at the same time, not really.
Right. I wish this movie was more awesome so we can discuss those crazy questions that the movie tries to ask, but yeah. I think ultimately fails at making us...
Don't really implant shitty people's memories into other people, because they're right. Still
as
shitty
smart, as smart as the mother is, she just couldn't let go of her abusive son. All right. Who she raised, by the way. Didn't you know? I mean, all come right. On. Anyway, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll do our last film of the evening, which is also... the last entry of our current marathon, The Departed. That's right.
Oh, that was about Schmidt.
It was about Schmidt. Now he's Schmidt's dead. So stay with us.
I don't want to be a product of my environment. I want my environment to be a product of me. Years ago, we had the church. That was only a way of saying we had each other.
But now, I don't know. It's a funny thing. It put hate in your heart.
The Knights of Columbus were real headbreakers, true guineas. They took over their piece of the city. 20 years after an Irishman couldn't get a fucking job, we had the presidency. May rest in peace. That's what the niggas don't realize. If I got one thing against the black chappies, it's this. No one gives it to you. You have to take it.
An undercover cop and a mole in the police attempt to identify each other while infiltrating an Irish gang in South Boston. The Departed. Directed by the one and only Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, Jack Nicholson, the main man, Marky Mark, Martin Sheen, and other people that's, you know, still good, but those are the top five. Oh, Alec Baldwin. He's cool too.
He's something in this movie. Right. Not that we're not gonna redo the movie yet.
Right.
But yeah.
Alright, so first we're gonna talk about our main man, right?
Yeah.
Alright. Honestly, I forgot how much he is in this movie. Like every time I think of The Departed, I just think of Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon's character. I remember Jack Nicholson as Costello as like a, you know, definitely a side character, but like someone we only see like a handful of times and only for a little bit. And I was like, oh man,
No, but he's in this movie.
He's in there quite a lot. And I was like, okay, this is much better.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. But, yeah. He just goes off the fucking rails at some points in this movie. And I don't know, but just him just having a shit ton of fun playing Costello. It's like this crazy, like, was it like a gang, a mob leader? Or,
I mean,
it's not mob, it's mob-esque.
The description says gang, and I guess maybe that's more accurate, but it feels mob to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
Or the new mob.
The new mob. Right, the new mob.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, he goes, he's crazy.
So what'd you think of him? This now old-timer.
It looks like he just gave him the keys, like, hey, this is the character you're going to play. Just go nuts. No script.
Scorsese just told him, like, okay, let's do one part Flew Over, two parts Shining, and three parts Joker from Batman.
You know. Yeah, just go nuts, kid. Go nuts.
Right.
Yeah, I have no idea, but he was out there.
Now, is that good or bad? I mean, did you?
Oh, like it's definitely great. No, it was amazing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, no, he definitely sold me on that. On him being Costello. Mm-hmm. I would not want to fuck with this man or his people or his entities or anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty safe to say. I mean, for in a land where people, I mean, where a lot of people, and maybe it's still true, I mean, it's very much true probably, you know, around that area or whatever, or other areas too, that the Italians, you know, when it comes to organized crime, they're the fucking kings, right? At least, that's how literature, documents, stuff, you know, FBI files, movies, kind of portray them. Mm-hmm. They're the king of this organized crime stuff. Syndicates, outfits, right? The mafia. I'm pretty sure mafia is an Italian word. Don't quote me on that, please. You know, we get the Irish side here. We get the, you know, I mean, not to say that they're not known for violence. I mean, they have a history of violence for sure. Like the Irish.
That was a good movie.
A History of Violence is a great fucking movie. I mean, we should just review that movie next for no reason at all, just to do it. But that's not what we're talking about. And I guess to see someone as formidable, even against the Italians in this movie, because the movie kind of pits them together a little bit. It's kind of a cool way to show how crazy this motherfucker is. Right?
Definitely.
To go against the epic Italians. I mean, in this movie, they're out of Providence, which is in Rhode Island, of course. And that's funny to think of Rhode Island as anything criminal, but there you go. I don't know anything about Rhode Island.
I drove through it.
Yeah, everyone does that. I'm sure everyone has.
I stopped off at this place called Newport Creamery. They have these like milkshake type things. They're called Awful Awfuls, but they're amazing.
They're amazing mazings.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Ralph, what did you think of Jack Nicholson? For fuck's sake.
So I actually like the beginning of the movie with Jack Nicholson in it.
That's the clip I'm using for the show, by the way.
Which you should.
Yeah.
Because it shows you the type of person that you should be afraid of, right? And who he is in the beginning of the movie and then to where he is later in the movie, right? Because it is about like 20-some year difference, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really cool part. In the movie, just to see like what he's doing and obviously what he's still doing and stuff like that. So seeing him there, very calm and also very like he knows like a teaching moment to tell that kid. Like he saw like potential. He's like it's like the look and the way he talks to people, and just the way he kind of is like has like this like. Almost a mystic thing going on because everyone like fears but respects him, right? Mm-hmm. And then the kid's like very enthralled by that. Like, I want some of that shit.
Right, he wants some of that power.
Right, very 100%. So like, it's really cool how he like gets people to be like on his side. And then later in the movie, as we see him progress, even though he kind of like goes into like madness, almost senile madness, it's just like. The movie does it like if the progression of the character is there, That's what's really cool about the movie is that there's something like, oh, well, I didn't find it believable that he kind of just went from here to there. Like, no, mm-hmm. it's there. He's telling himself that he doesn't even know himself, like, what turns him on anymore. What is the purpose of him doing things? So he's just doing it to do things, right? And, like, because it's fun to do these things or because it's this to do these things.
Yeah, he's known for, I mean, he earned the name Frank Costello. Like a name every household in that city knows, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Right. But now it seems like the rest of the movie, Jack Nicholson is playing a guy who is doing things because that's what Frank should do. But he is Frank. He's like, at some point, the name overshot him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
100%. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's doing he did so much that he's had to now is that
he has to continue.
He has to continue something like that, right? And he's being tested at all turns, or he feels like he's being tested at all turns, at least, to live up to that name or to do something like that. So yeah, I think he does play a good role in this. And what's it called? Even though it's a little bit, I guess, I mean, it's not as like strong per se, especially towards the end, because it does look like he's, but that, like, the character itself in the movie is that, so he does a good job, I mean, as an actor. So I don't know, the movie overall, I think Jack Nicholson does a great supporting role in this movie, to be Frank Costello in the movie.
I do think he's good, definitely nowhere near his best, and I say that because while I think he's good, and oh my god, I mean, the character written itself super important to the whole movie, obviously. Without him, there's no movie. And even though he's a supporting character, a high supporting character, without him, there's absolutely no movie or perspective or drive or any of that. The guy really commands the persona, right? This is not Jack Nicholson I'm talking about. This is a character. Definitely, without him, there's no movie. But Jack Nicholson himself, though, he's just, this is a Jack Nicholson that at the time when Departed came out, which was 2008, something like that, 2006, 2005, I don't remember. When the movie came out, that he was kind of like he has been Al Pacino'd. He had been, you know, he was already the extreme ridiculous version of himself. He has already been a parody of himself, you know. And it's Jack Nicholson. He could do whatever the fuck he wants, much like Frank Costello. Like, the actor could do whatever. He doesn't care. He never cared either. He didn't care when he did about Schmidt. Not that he was ridiculous in that movie. He was actually more restrained than I thought he would be. But, like, you think of Mars Attacks, right? You think of, like, other things like that, right? Like, he was already, like, Mars Attacks is probably his sense of a woman without winning the Oscar, basically. Or, you know what, probably as good as it gets is his sense of a woman, because he actually won the Oscar, I think. You know, he's that. Still a good actor, but like a parody version of himself. Especially when you think of the old stuff he did in the 70s and 80s, right? And I think that that Scorsese uses Jack Nicholson so well. And I think a very good comparison is what he did to Al Pacino in The Irishman. I think you could compare those two characters and the actors that he hired for those characters,
right,
really well. And Jack Nicholson plays the part that he has been already playing at that time, and yeah, just uses him so well, like a.
But that's what it is. That's what it is. I think he does it. You know, he knows that Jack Nicholson isn't going to do another Shining thing going on or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he knows that he can get something out of them and fit the role that he needs him to fit. Yeah, that's why
by the movie.
Yeah, for the movie, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it works out really well. So.
Yeah, I mean, this one, out of all the choices in the movie, of our marathon, I think this is the one where Jack Nicholson is used the most, rather than him using the movie to outclass anyone, but to show, you know, what he can do. You know what I'm saying? It's like the first one where he is in service to the plot and the movie itself, rather than, like, it's a movie with Jack Nicholson. Like, no, it's a movie with all these people. That includes Jack Nicholson. You know what I'm saying? It feels different. Because even as A Few Good Men, I mean, his lines in that movie is what everyone remembers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's still, like, the head of that movie, even though he's in that movie less than in The Departed. You know? I don't know. That's just my general thoughts on that. What else do you think about Jack Nicholson there, Luke? Do you think he was, like, in what I'm saying? Or do you think he was something else? Do you think he was
I definitely thought he had some of the best fucking lines, though.
The opening alone, for real.
Oh, yeah. Well, the opening was great, because it just showed, like, the contrast between, like, you know, you had Frank Costello, you know, giving his spiel, then you had, like, the, you know, our two characters as children, and how they're being brought up and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no, that was a great-ass opening, because it's very establishing.
Yeah, agreed. Unfortunately, though, I don't have a whole lot else on Jack Nicholson himself. I definitely want to talk about the character when we talk about the movie. So, you guys mind getting into the movie itself now, or you guys want to mention something else? Because it's the last Nicholson-ness we're going to focus on. Speaking about that beginning, Rafa, you said earlier about you can totally see that the man who recruited this boy, that's going to be Matt Damon, you know, turning into this senile, psychotic version of himself completely. Also, I buy that in the opening. And the line that tells me all that for me is when he's telling the boy version, right, Sullivan, he's telling him, like, when I was a kid, you could either be cops or robbers. And my point is that when you're facing a loaded gun, what's the difference? Like, you can totally see that man becomes that psycho in the future, right?
Right, yeah.
That was the line that sold me on Costello everything after that.
Right.
But you guys know who who Costello is based on, by any chance?
No.
Whitey Bulger. Anyone heard of him?
Yeah, we saw that movie with him in it.
That's right. Are you thinking of the Johnny Depp movie? Is that what you think of?
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Mass. He is, like, loosely based on that guy. Obviously, written differently and so on and so forth. To accommodate the whole, more of the Irishness of it all, and less about being historically accurate, which I agree with overall. Just take the persona and just put it somewhere else. But same city, you know, same overall power he had over that city, very similar. The whole thing with the FBI, also very similar. But what do you know about Whitey Bulger?
I do not.
Okay. What do you remember about this guy? I'm just asking because, you know, just so people know.
Everybody in Southie knew him. He was basically feared. I don't know.
Really, a maniac with
just the basics. Yeah, he was a maniac, but
at the same time, maniac for sure.
Licensed to murder.
Yeah, 100%.
Basically, almost, yes. Because of his involvement with the FBI, giving them info and whatnot. A lot of it fake info, too, by the way, from what I hear in history. I never read a biography on him or anything. I've only saw one documentary on him a long time ago, and I saw Black Mass, which isn't, like, necessarily a source of information for reality, but it is a source of information as to what the perception of humanity believes he is or was. I love Costello. He drives the entire movie. And it's funny how little he means to Leonardo DiCaprio's character, like, as a historical thing, because the movie really touches on history. Like, the history of these people, how they're grown up, what they seek out for in career, like, what their living is. It all completely is involved with what their parents were, what, you know, who told them to do. Like, it's their history is constantly taking over their lives in this movie, including Leonardo DiCaprio, because he would never want to be a cop if his family weren't involved with the mafia. Simple as that. He was clearly rebelling.
100%.
He clearly had a mother who raised him right, you know, right, so to speak, like, and a father who, you know, had connections, but never himself. You know, they kind of mentioned a lot in the movie in the beginning.
Right.
He never, you know, took up the mafia-ness of it all, even though he was a badass in his own right. And, like, the idea of Costello, like, you can see why Costello got this guy to be in his gang. Like, this part of history that this family would never, like, allow him into their gang, he's got one of theirs into his. And I think he likes that fuck you to them. And he's kind of saying fuck you to the whole movie in every respect, to the police establishment, to all establishments, to women, to everyone. To quote, as he fucking throws it on the bed. You know, like, I love it. I just love it. But what do you guys want to talk about? I don't want to take this whole show. So, what do you guys want to talk about in the movie?
Um, It's a good movie.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Like? Are you awake?
I am.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think, like, what do we talk about this movie? I think we all fucking think this movie's amazing. I think ever since we all saw it back in 2006.
Is that when it came out?
Yeah, 2006, 14 old years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is the movie that won Scorsese finally his Oscar, right? It was a big deal, whatever.
Oh, did it? He didn't have one before?
No, he never won before. He was nominated like 12 times, but he never won before.
Since like Taxi Driver, Raging Bull.
I mean, he deserved it for those two alone, way better than this one, in my opinion.
Right.
But, because, I mean, especially since like this is seen like in the same vein as Goodfellas, in the same vein as Casino, right? In the same vein as even like Wolf of Wall Street, which comes after this. But where the movie kind of like glorifies violence. You know what I'm talking about, guys? It glorifies this badass sense of like, you know, I'm a hero. I'm going to take down whatever I have to do by killing, you know, by beating and killing and conniving and all this.
Yeah.
And Scorsese himself has come out and said like very, you know, things about that and nature and stuff like that, that he doesn't really like that about it. But, you know, he's also trying to also entertain you guys, entertain the masses, right? So he does both a really good job at something that he doesn't necessarily want to do. And that's why The Irishman was the way it was, but which I approve of. There's so many angles to this movie. Like, I feel completely, I feel so bad for Leonardo DiCaprio's character, so bad for this Costigan kid.
Right.
The whole time. His interview goes bad. His interview gives him the shred of hope that he actually can do some real work, like real impact into the very reason he's in the Stadies, which is, not to bring down the mob necessarily.
The Massachusetts State Police?
Yeah, Massachusetts State Police. The Stadies, that's what I said. To bring down this huge criminal element. And, but what it cost him, the way it affects him. I just felt so sorry for him. And I always hated Matt Damon the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They do a really good job of making him, because he's like this likable guy by everybody. Right. And, you know, like, oh, he's a great guy. He's moving on up. And, you know, he's always very gun-ho and this and that and model officer and bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, this fucking piece of shit. Like, everybody in the audience is just like, there's no way you don't hate him. It's so hard to not hate him. Yeah.
But it's funny because outside of that, he's kind of like suffering, you know, like he can't deal with everything going on with the fucking Costello and everything, trying to find the mole and erectile dysfunction.
erectile dysfunction. It's funny how, Scorsese is such a... He just moves through things so fast sometimes. You have to really know. Well, you have to really pay attention because they never mention the erectile thing again. They mention it once. Yep. And you have to know what they're talking about because they don't just out and right say that.
Well, yeah, but there was another time where what's his face? Baldwin's character, you know, he's like at like a golf range.
Shit.
And he's all like talking to him about, he's like, you know, about like, I guess having like kids. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm working overtime. I'm like, no, you're not. You can't even get it up. He puts up this funny persona.
I never thought of that. I never. You're right. It makes perfect. I never put the erectile dysfunction scene and that scene together in my life until right now. So that's good. I never thought of that way. But yeah, right. He's lying. I mean, assuming it's still going on, but he's lying. Yeah, he's not working overtime at all on it. He's just trying to be like. Oh,
we
man,
all know it wasn't his kid, so you got it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a question I was going to have for you guys at the end or later on, but might as well ask it now. Is it Leo's kid or Damon?
I think it's Leo's kid.
I think hope makes you want that.
Yeah, I think hope makes you want that too.
It's like Pan's Labyrinth. Did she go to the underworld or is she really just dead? you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, yeah, my answer is yeah, Leo, because why would you want the worser answer? Right. And you don't know, the movie leaves it open, right? So
I'll say something also. The movie does a great job of adulting Leo in this movie, like making him feel like he ages, because he does, like, a lot. He looks like a hot mess in comparison to when he was in the Academy.
Right, compare him to The Interview? Right. Completely different.
Yeah.
It's like whatever shred of baby face gone by the time the opening credits actually really start, because when he's in that prison, he's aging already. And then, like, in that whole montage opening kind of thing. But also this movie, guys, remember, there's two protagonists, equal parts protagonist is the Leo and Damon. Obviously, I should really say Sullivan and Costigan. They really are equally. And there are parts where I can't help it. The scene is on his side, so I empathize with Sullivan. Like when he's hitting on the psychiatrist in the elevator, or even that first date they have, like, he won me over too, because it's fucking Matt Damon.
Yeah.
You know, like,
no. That's like
part of it. I want him to succeed in scoring with this girl that doesn't know what she's getting into.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie is so good about that stuff.
Can we just talk about the real hero of this movie, though?
Are we going to talk about Marky Mark?
Marky Mark.
Yeah. Mark. I knew what Pop was going to go with.
It's got to be Marky Mark. That's the real hero of this movie.
What do you want to talk about him?
I thought it was Martin Sheen.
You mean the fallen angel?
The father figure.
Like an
the
angel?
Father. He was the... No. He had to, you know... He did his part. He thought he was doing the right thing, you know. But it's okay. But everybody still dies. That was a crazy scene, though, when, like, that Mexican standoff or whatever the hell it was, standoff, that everyone just gets killed except for Matt Damon.
Everyone dies in this movie.
Everyone.
Except for Alec Baldwin and Marky Mark and the girl, I guess.
Right.
Out of a cast of 20, everyone dies.
Right, exactly. So I really like, though, that he kind of leaves the movie for a while. But before that, he always plays this, like, you can tell, like, they're all obviously raised in the same part. They're all Southies, you know, from Boston. And they're just, like, he's, like, cutting through the bullshit. He's just like, I'm not going to fucking bullshit. Like, what's the point? I'm just going to cut right through it. I'm going to actually see who you are, and I'm going to test your patience. I'm going to test you everything. And I'm just going to go and fucking start berating you and speaking how everyone else speaks in regular, you know, in regular Boston. And that's how he gets through everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, if either you fucking deal with it or you don't. And that's how he judges your sense of character. And he does a really good job. Like, and then also when he saves the freaking movie, like the redemption where he just shows up in Matt Damon's house. You know, just.
I mean, he doesn't save the movie. He's too late. The whole time he's too
late. No. He saves the movie as in, like, from what it has already been.
He saves it for the audience.
For the audience. That's what I'm trying to say.
He got revenge.
He's not saving it he saved, you know, came in just in time for... No.
That's a good way to make your audience...
I said saving the movie. I didn't say saving, you know, Billy in the movie.
I don't think it's saving the movie. I think he just got revenge for the movie. Like, it's like... and then the famous last shot with the rat overseeing the church, which is a lot of people would consider, like, a little too heavy-handed there. But...
Wait, what church?
Really? Do you not remember Matt Damon chose that condo to live there? Remember when he first got the place and throughout the whole movie in the background, and he's often staring at it when the camera's not even showing it. He's constantly staring at that church with the golden dome, whatever you call it.
Oh, it's not a church.
That's not a church?
It's the state house.
It's a state house?
Yeah, something like that.
I saw a cross on it. I know nothing of Boston.
I just saw it not too long ago.
No, I believe you. I just thought it was a church the whole time.
No, that's the Massachusetts State House with the golden dome.
Oh, you're kidding. I did not know that. Huh. I wonder if... Because I could have sworn I saw a cross there. Is there a cross there?
There probably is.
Huh. Because the movie doesn't say what that is, right? Am I wrong?
The guy... I think the real estate guy says that you can see the state house or whatever.
Maybe you're right about that. But I didn't know he meant the golden thing there. I just thought he meant you could just see it, like, I don't know, often somewhere. Wow. Because I thought it was a lot more about his past with, you know, because Sullivan the kid met Costello, and Costello kind of, like, brought him over to the dark side, like, literally a devil on his shoulder, taking him away from the church by making fun of the whole stand and kneel, you know? So I thought it was about that, like a jab to that.
No.
But now it's like, what the fuck? I don't know what to think anymore. Okay, well, then fuck, strike that from the record. But no, that's fine. I just thought it was some other thing. But either way, still heavy-handed as fuck. A rat walks by. Come on. Runs by on the balcony. I mean, perfect ending still, obviously. I loved it, but heavy-handed. So I want to talk about something that before this movie I had never seen before. And now, granted, by this time, 30 Rock was already a thing. I'm pretty sure, pretty positive on that. But even then, I had only seen a handful of 30 Rocks by then. I really finished the show after this movie. But this is the first time I saw Alec Baldwin as a non-serious actor. By that, I mean, he could actually be fucking hilarious. That's what I mean. Like,
I mean, he was serious in this movie.
No. He was not. He was a character. He wasn't. He was playing a character, not in character. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't. He was supposed to be, like, almost throwaway. You know what I'm saying? He was like a foster father in a sea of real fathers with Martin Sheen, the father figure for Leo, and then Costello's, you know, father figure for Matt Damon, and also, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's character too, because he's in Undercover. I mean, he had like so many like funny little throwaway jabs and lines here and there, and I just thought he has really good timing.
He really did. I agree 100%. He really did have, like, especially when he's like starts bantering with somebody else.
Yeah.
It's just really good lines.
Don't judge him from this meeting alone.
Yeah.
I love it. I quote him actually quite a bit sometimes, here and there. It's just too hilarious just thinking about it. So I just want to mention that real quick, because I never really see him funny, is my point. Not that he was like, but he was talking about throwaway character. Come on. He didn't move the story forward other than he wanted Costello. But everyone wanted Costello. So it's not like, you know. Anyway, right. Whatever. What do you guys think this movie's saying about cops and criminals? The movie's clearly saying something. It's switching between them back and forth so much.
There's a fine line between a cop and a criminal.
Jesus, you sound like a 90s show.
Fuck. You love every moment of it.
Oh, no, yeah, totally. If it's done right, I'll love it. But, man, you sound like NYPD Blue.
Never saw it.
That's okay. It's definitely too old for you.
Is it?
Ralph, any opinions or thoughts on what the movie could be saying? Or what you think it's saying?
About the cops and the...
Yeah, because, I mean, do you have a cop that's a criminal and a criminal that's a cop, right? Clearly, you have to ask yourself something.
Right.
For me, I think the movie's point of view in a Hollywood kind of way, in a good script writing kind of way, it's saying, what's the difference? Just like, you know, Costello says in the beginning of the movie, after the opening monologue thing. That's what, you know, he says to Sullivan. That's what I'm saying. That's what the movie's saying overall. Like, what's the difference? It's like your choices that matter, not even the badge that matters. And the whole idea of the ceremony and the you know, that's why he kind of says the bagpipes and shit towards the end when he's arresting Matt Damon. Like the bullshit of it all. Like, that's what he doesn't care about anymore. And it's sad, but it's like, I think the movie is kind of like throwing it away in a way of saying, like, it's the choices that matter. Not that, I'm not saying it's being philosophical, guys. I'm just saying that in the context of the movie, there really is no difference between those two professions. And especially with the main actors. But what were you going to say, Ralph? I don't know if you're going to say something.
I was going to say that, that's the undistinguishable line for the movie here. That's basically what I was going to say, is that it's very much kind of like what's his name said with the gun pointing down your face, the barrel of the gun.
Yeah.
I mean, does it matter? Like, it is what it is. Also, I feel like, I also kind of feel like the movie's saying, like, the cops are, every cop can still do a bad thing, and even bad guys can still do good things. It's kind of both ways. In a weird way, where it doesn't have, just because there's a spy or something like that, what about the one guy who doesn't tell the fact that he's a rat, right? Who dies.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And he's like questioning himself as to why as he's dying.
Yeah.
Like why he didn't rat him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's I like that scene. It also throws me off every time because I still don't know for sure. For all I know, he meant something else. Maybe he's not a cop, you know. who knows? I don't know. I want to say something about the soundtrack. Jesus Christ. I mean, no one else has the rights to this kind of songs, honestly, than Scorsese.
Scorsese always has like good choices in there.
Well, yeah. No. It's because he did documentaries for the Rolling Stones. That's why he has access to his music.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason for that. I mean, you know how much it will cost to rent a song? You know, he can't afford it. Or whatever. Most times, movies cannot afford it. And they often don't give it either.
Didn't he blow like a shit ton of money on like one of his movies because he had to have a particular song from them?
Oh, I don't know for sure about that. I just know that in the past... I'm not saying for The Departed, although I'm pretty much willing to bet that at least one of the times he got for free on that one. Rolling Stones did give him a bone. He's like, just use the song, whatever. Like, they totally gave him permission. And in certain movies, maybe certain projects, maybe just one that I'm thinking of, but I know I read it somewhere and that it was true. Because of his, he's done like two or three of their concert docs. Am I right, Ralph? Or at least one, I know that much, but I don't know how many there were that Scorsese did for them. So yeah, he's known them for. I mean, they both grew up to be as famous for in their respective fields at the same time, you know. So like, yeah, they both know each other very well. But man, what a good soundtrack! it's the best use of "Give Me Shelter," always.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. Let's see. Man, there's so much to talk about, and yet I don't know what else to think of right now. Oh my god, I want to say something about the cell phone. What a great time to make this movie! The way they use the flip phones in this movie. The best way I've ever seen cell phones in a movie ever. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, definitely not like today.
The way Matt Damon texts while his hand is in his pocket by memorizing, like knowing where, right? Because you can't do that no more. At least you can't do it as well anymore because you have to be sure. Like the idea of the flip phone era, and also like when they end conversations on a bad note or an angry note or whatever, the way they close them and the way the sound effect always works, like it just. What a weird little time where cell phones were used cinematically well.
Yep.
You know, in a sea of not well, especially horror movies, where like cell phones are like a way to explain away how you can't use them. You know?
Yeah.
I just thought that was super cool. This movie's super style. And I think that's it. I mean, there's more, I'm sure.
At the same time, it does feel like dated 100% because of the flip phone.
Oh, totally.
The same time, you know, I 100% agree with you with it. It does that texting in the pocket and everything like that. It is well used. Even as simple as having the red phone and the not red phone to know who's calling him.
Yeah.
And stuff right. Like that.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The super close ups on them and everything. You know immediately. The only other movie I can think of that uses phones this well and this well stylized to the movie itself is The Matrix. And that's it. Those are the only two movies that I can think of. I don't think I'll get much pushback on that one because very few movies use it so well. And I think that's all I have on the movie. Anything that you want to mention or talk about before we end it?
I don't know. I just thought it really sucked for DiCaprio's character. Like you thought, oh, this is it. This is good. He's going to finally get his redemption and. He's going to get his identity back.
Did you see this movie with me in theaters?
Anyone? I think I did.
Then you guys remember that reaction in the movie theater, right? We all went, what?
Yeah.
When he got shot in the fucking, like out of nowhere. And then everyone started dying off. By the time the fourth death happened, or that third, no, it was three deaths in that scene.
Yeah.
By the time the third hit.
It was fucking nuts.
We were like, we were just laughing. We were just reacting at that point. We weren't even reacting normally. We were like, Leo's dead already. And there's two more dying after him. That was a crazy moment in movie theater history for me because it was a packed full theater and I remember just acting so like, why? No, you know, just so sad. Just so sad. He gets the bagpipes. He gets the bagpipes and bullshit.
He does. That he was making sure that Matt Damon wasn't going to get.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
You know, the most, one of those shitty part also is when he says, I just want to go on the record and give him the the Metal Gear.
Oh, what a piece of shit. That's a Joffrey line. That's the thing that makes me hate him like Joffrey.
Right,
that's,
dude.
That's what
I
that
swear,
is.
I, when he says that,
what a fucking little bullshitter.
Like,
yeah.
What a fucking teabag.
Oh, okay. We were making a mistake. Why didn't we mention the girl?
And did you guys find their relationship believable between her and Billy?
Oh, so barely.
Right. It was like, let's go for coffee. All right, let's fuck. Like, wait, what?
No, put a baby in you.
I think the rock and roll aspect of Scorsese's direction is, I think it's meant to imply that some time has passed. Or maybe the same day. But either way, they're both like fucked up people. That just
I get that.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that
yeah,
it just felt like, no, I did feel like it was like different instances. Like they had coffee and then a different time they met up again for like coffee again or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know. But it just felt like, I don't know why she was meeting up with him. I never knew why.
I think, I can't really speculate too much because the one bad thing I would say is that it doesn't really write the one woman in the movie that well, and she's barely in it. Although she is a huge glue component, like by the end, but she's not the reason for A or B or C. The only thing incredulous, the only one thing I find kind of hard to believe in this movie is that on top of the connections that Sullivan and Costigan have with each other that they don't know about because they don't know each other, is that on top of it all, he actually sleeps with, you know, the dude's wife. Oh, the dude's girlfriend, sorry. Like, on top of all the coincidences, right? When you think of, like who knew that all these history would put these two together against each other and not know each other, right? On top of that, there's this added thing.
Now, did he ever know that it was his, he's dating her?
No, not right? Until at the funeral, when she was there at the funeral.
No.
Next,
I'm talking about, did Billy ever know that?
No.
No, right?
No, that's, because he sent the address of the same information that he had given her to hide or keep away. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, that is nuts. Yeah. So that's the only one part. I mean, it's cool and it felt cool at the time and I'll always love it because it felt cool. But like, it's not really believable though. It sounds a little too far-fetched, you know, for all these connections to quite happen that way. But I think can I believe she would do that with him and stuff like that? Totally. Not because, I think a little bit because of Costigan or Leonardo's character is kind of like very empathetic. Like it's, you know, you can see how much he's suffering if you pay attention. Luckily, no one in Costello's gang ever paid attention. But
nobody.
No one. Except they can't even spell citizens. Frenchie. Right. They can't even spell citizens, much less, you know, pay attention to that guy.
Oh, that was great. That's not right.
That ain't fucking right. Yeah, I know. It's great. what an idiot. Anyway, I completely believe that she would. And then I think the thing that clinched it for her is when he put up her picture, the framed photo of her as a kid. And hang it up in the apartment. Yeah.
Totally different, it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
We might have company over. Let's not have this out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was joking, but still, her reaction to that after he left the room.
It's like, you know, behind every joke, there's some truth.
Yeah, something like that, yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's probably what she thought, too. Or maybe led to believe that she thought. Yeah, those are subtle things in this movie that really makes me like that whole plot, even though she's again not in it very much, and kind of hard to believe that she would be in it as much as she was.
Right.
But yeah, that's it. Now that's all I have on The Departed. I could talk about this movie forever. I could watch it forever. I watch it every year. It's great. Any last moments or thoughts before we exit?
Nope.
All right, Luke, you good?
I think so.
All right.
It was good to watch this movie again, though.
Always good to watch it. Well, that was our last review, and that's been our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. You also heard the last episode of our marathon, which is, of course, our Jack Nicholson marathon. The next show, we're not going to have a marathon, but by our next show, though, we are going to have one picked out. Or either we'll do it live, well, not live, but we'll never do anything live. But either you'll hear the recording of that conversation next episode, or we'll have one ready by then, and then we'll announce it at the end of the next episode. So with that in mind, Ralph is going to have three new movies for us. But before we get to that, you can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke?
At Slothmaster Luke.
And Ralph?
Don Rafael underscore between the Rafael.
Yeah. And remember, we are a bi-weekly show, so next 2 weeks from now, which will be after Halloween, so everyone happy Halloween in general. But Ralph, what are the three movies you're choosing?
Let me click that link. We are going to be watching Borat, subsequent movie film.
Yikes.
That's going to be good.
No, okay. No, I hope it's funny.
That's on Amazon Prime. Luke, this is for you.
right.
Hulu's Bad Hair.
Hmm.
We're going to watch that one. Okay.
That's Bad Hair.
Comedy horror movie that's out right now.
Is this like Get Duped?
Something like that.
I
want to say The Hair Comes Alive. Think of that Simpsons episode with the hair. And
hope. No, there's an actual movie with who plays Luke Skywalker, the actor? Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill?
Yeah, Mark Hamill plays a character where the hair comes alive, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Or makes him a homicidal maniac and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forget the name.
But that's like a hair implant, though, right?
I feel like it's a carpenter thing. I don't remember.
Sounds like it.
Anyway.
Anyways. Sorry. I don't know what this movie is. I don't think exactly like that. And I guess the other movie, I put it on the show notes also, just for you guys. Apple TV, right? Is that where it is?
Yeah, the Apple TV Plus.
On the Rocks. Apple TV Plus?
Oh, you are going for On the Rocks. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a huge Coppola fan, isn't he?
I haven't seen her last three movies, so I don't know how
he... Oh, really? That. You haven't? I think I missed one, but I've seen overall almost... I think all of them.
Yeah, I didn't see The Bling Ring. I didn't see the other one.
Oh, I did. Well, that's a Sofia Coppola movie. It's starring who again? I think it's starring... is it Bill Murray?
Yeah. Bill Murray. Rashida Jones. Marlon Wayans. Jessica Henwick. Jenny Slate.
Cool.
And so on.
So those are the three movies, so check us out. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph.
See you later.
Bye.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie, oh my.
You didn't hear it from me.